All right, guys, welcome to the show. It's the Scott Horton Show. I'm him. I'm here weekdays, noon to 2 Eastern on the Liberty Radio Network. Full interview archives at scotthorton.org. More than 3,500 interviews now, going back to 2003, there at scotthorton.org. You can follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show. I'm realizing now I have as bad a Twitter problem as I ever had a Facebook problem. I'm going to have to, just as bad as a cigarette problem I used to have, I'm going to have to break it. I'm going to get the hell off Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter. If I say I'm going to get the hell off there, I'll probably be there more than ever now. It's like when I promise I'll be brief about a subject out loud on the show here. / Scott Horton Show on Twitter. No guests. I don't know. I sent out some invites. I ain't heard back. But there's plenty of bad news to cover, and you know me. I'll just interview my damn self. I'm perfectly happy to. And in fact, you know, if you guys want to get involved on the telephone, then maybe we could do some of that too. Join up the chat room. That's scotthorton.org/chat. And we already got some people in there. Aqua Buddha is in there. Hey, Rand, I'm glad to know that you're listening to the show. I hope to be a good influence on you, Senator. That is indeed you. Yeah, I assume it is, right? Got number 6 and JDA 2000 and Yanovich and a lot of the greats hanging out in the chat room there. scotthorton.org/chat. And it's a free node chat, an IRC free node chat, so if that means anything to you, you can do that. But you don't even need external programming. You can just go use your plain old browser window, go to scotthorton.org/chat, fake name and a CAPTCHA, or your real name, I don't care, and a CAPTCHA, and you're in. And the CAPTCHAs are easy. They're all photographs of addresses instead of really squiggly, ridiculous things that you got to try 3 times. Even if you're not a robot, at least for me, it's working out. The CAPTCHAs there. All right, yeah. scotthorton.org/chat. And then I guess you guys can let me know if you're interested in doing some phone calls on the show. Maybe we'll take some phone calls. You know, I guess there are a couple of subjects in the news right now where I'm not exactly sure what all I think and what all I have to say about them. I'm thinking primarily about the riots in Ferguson. Obviously, the government are the greatest threat to life and liberty there in the whole state of Missouri. No doubt about that. Interesting questions of the riots and Oath Keepers showing up and doing the job that the cops won't do, but also scaring the hell out of the protesters. They ought to be marching with the protesters and protecting them from the cops, right? I don't know. I'm a little confused, but anyway. You know, I don't know. Maybe it's a bad idea to get into in-depth discussions of race on a call-in radio show, but why not, man? I'm talking about race and the cops. That's the real racial difference that we have here, man. It's blue privilege, blue supremacy. Which actually, that's not even really right. It's but you can't say black. You say blue because that's like the color of their uniforms, right? But they all dress in black now. They all dress in SWAT gear all damn day, pretty much. I guess you could call it a camouflage privilege. You see a lot of that, too. But, you know, if you say black like their SWAT uniforms, well, that just confuses the issue. Nobody knows what you're talking about anymore. So they call it blue privilege, even though the point is all of these cops ought to be immediately, well, they ought to all just be fired, obviously, but, you know, if you're trying to get your uncle to listen to you, how about they all have to go right back to wearing their blue blouses again? How about that? And then we can argue about blue privilege when they even have to wear blue, when they even have to be. You know, I told a cop one time, he said, I was at a protest, he said, all civilians must stay on this side of the line. And I said, you're a civilian. You do know that, right? That you're just a local city police officer, that doesn't make you anything separate from a civilian. Do you know that? Do you understand that? And of course, I was the one who was wrong. I was just, you know, I was talking about in theory. He was looking at me like, huh? Because he was living in the real world. Where, no, he's much more like a paramilitary agent of a evil empire than civilian peace officer. Hell, that was even way back when. So yeah, maybe we'll do some phone calls on the show if you guys are interested. Maybe I'll hear back from some of my guests that I've attempted to invite on the show. But yeah, you know what? Speaking of possible guests and the cops, I think this is the news story I want to start with today. I didn't get a chance to do cop coverage on the show yesterday, so here's to help make up for that a little bit. And this is a guy, I just emailed him to see if I can get this guy on the show. His name is Sean King, and he writes at the Daily Kos. And I've been following him on Twitter, and he's the guy who said, look, man, they're lying when they say that Mike Brown was 35 feet away from the cop. He was at least 150 feet away. And then I think they ended up agreeing. He said 148, and they said 152, or strike that, reverse it. Something very close. That they ended up admitting that this guy's analysis from the photographs was correct, and that the talking point, 35 feet away, 35 feet away, wasn't true. Because really, 35 feet ain't too dang far. But 150 feet sure is. He had no choice because it was bulking up like a demon to run through the bullets 150 feet away from you. You had no choice but to shoot 9 times and hit 6. I don't know. Anyway, he debunked that and was vindicated in his debunking, even by the grand jury, when the grand jury information was released. And now here he is, has a piece, December the 2nd, it's dated, so last night, really, yesterday morning, pardon me. Tamir Rice, the story behind the senseless killing, character assassination, and resulting cover-up. Now this is about the Cleveland cops that killed a 12-year-old boy with a BB gun at the park. And just think, if this was your son or your nephew or the neighbor kid, a child that you knew, a 12-year-old boy that you knew. The equation is increasingly predictable. An African-American is killed by police. Controlling the narrative, police release their version of events and state they had no other alternative but to use lethal force. Eyewitnesses, recordings, and indisputable facts counter the police narrative and expose glaring inconsistencies in their story. Then the character assassination of the shooting victim and his family begins. The officers are not punished for what they did. The family and community are left in a state of grief, fueled by a lack of closure or justice. Repeat. Tragically, this equation has been used over and over again, and is proving itself to be quite effective at protecting police and infuriating communities all across the United States. Do your own research. Look at your own sources. Google names like John Crawford, Kendrick McDade, Sean Bell, Ramarley Graham, Eric Garner, Kamedji Powell. Those names could be exchanged with 600 more. In each case, you will find the above equation to work like a well-oiled machine. The police kill a man, a black man, grossly misrepresent the facts, then assassinate the character of their victim, and then completely get away with it. Tamir Rice, a 12-year-old boy who was shot and killed by the Cleveland police, is the newest name we must add to the list. Seen on a local security camera, loafing around a community park alone, Tamir makes snowballs, walks around, and plays with a pellet gun. Concerned, a man calls 911 to report Tamir. And I guess, so now the music's playing, we gotta goddamn stop. He goes on to say, as we've talked about on the show before, the guy who called the cops said it was a kid with probably a toy gun. The dispatcher didn't tell the cops that. So they showed up and killed him, and then we'll get to the five lies in just a moment after this break. Hey, Al Scott here for Whole Food Multicomplete at WholeFoodComplete.com. Whole Food Multicomplete is an entire supplement program in one bottle containing 100% RDA of vitamins and minerals, plus live probiotics, digestive enzymes, antioxidant herbs, energy nutrients, and more. It's made in America using real foods and live probiotics. No chemical synthetics. It's soy-free, gluten-free, and independently tested and verified. They're so sure you'll love it, they're taking 20% off your first order with coupon code Scott Horton. Satisfaction is guaranteed at WholeFoodComplete.com. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton, and this is my show. So I just got a, unfortunately, no can do from the author of this thing I'm pointing you at here. It's at Daily Coast, which I know that's the Democrats or whatever, but I don't care. In this case, this guy, Sean King, as far as I know, all he writes about is the subject of people getting killed by cops. So I don't care if he's a communist or if he's a liberal, which most of the time I think is even worse than a communist at this point, because it's not like the communists can really take all your property away, but they're good on the empire, whereas liberals are horrible on everything. But anyway, I don't know nothing else about this guy's politics, don't care. All I know is he hates it when cops kill innocent people. I don't even know that he hates cops, which would make me like him more. I just know that he's good on, another unarmed black person was murdered by a cop. Maybe we should pay attention to that. So here we go. He says, he goes through, and I'm sorry if you're just tuning in late. I guess I'll sum up. In the last break, I read the first part of Sean King's piece here at the Daily Coast. You can find it on my Twitter feed if you're looking for it. Here, I'll put it in the chat room too. What happens is, he says there's a formula here. The cops kill an innocent black person, and it could be innocent person, and they lie their asses off about what happened. Then when the truth starts coming out, they don't care, because then they just do a character assassination and lie a little more, and then they just get away with it, and then they just move on and kill somebody else. And so in this case, you can't even fall back on your, well, nobody's innocent thing, because in this case, it's a 12-year-old boy. It's a 12-year-old boy. As though, well, nobody's innocent is a good enough excuse for cops murdering people. Like they have the authority to murder people. And anyway, what happened after the cops murdered this 12-year-old boy? What did they do? They lied. One, they said he was seated at a table with other people, as in he was some kind of threat to them. Well, that's not true. The video that they didn't know, obviously, they didn't know was recording the whole thing, proves that that's not true. If they knew that they were on video the whole time, maybe they would have tried to construct their lie a little bit more carefully. Oh, well, you know, right before we pulled up on camera, he was threatening us off camera, some kind of something, right? Instead, their story is completely demolished by the footage. By the Big Brother camera. Thought police busted. Not that they're in trouble. Police say that Tamir Rice was seated at the table with other people. Police said that as they pulled up, they saw Tamir Rice grab the gun and put it in his waistband. 3, police said they got out of the car and told Tamir Rice 3 times to put his hands up, but he refused. 4. This is the 4th lie in a row now. Police say that Tamir Rice then reached into his waistband and pulled out the gun and was then shot and killed by Officer Timothy Lohman. And then 5, he was described, the officer that murdered him, was described as a rookie. Oh, you know, rookie mistake kind of thing. Just build that little tiny bit of mitigating something. No, that was a lie too. And so the footage shows that Tamir Rice, the 12-year-old boy who was murdered by this cop, is not seated at a table with other people. He does not grab the gun and put it in his waistband. The police shot and killed him in less than 2 seconds from the time the car pulled up. They could not possibly have said, drop the gun 3 times, or put your hands up, or what was it that they claimed that they said? To put his hands up. They could not possibly have ordered him to put his hands up three times before they killed him. The cop clearly is just kills him as he's getting out of the car. The moment, you know, the door's opening up as the car's still moving. The cop jumps out and just waxes him. Four, Tamir Rice absolutely does not pull the air gun, again, the toy gun, out of his waistband or brandish it in any way. In any way. It's just not true. And the cop's not a rookie. He'd been an officer for over 2 years. So they murdered a 12-year-old boy, and then what, right? They lied. They lied. They're liars. They're the worst criminals in Cleveland, Ohio, see? Who else in Cleveland, Ohio recently murdered a 12-year-old boy? And then just wait. Are you ready for this? If you got real young kids in the room, you should cover their ears and tell them to sing Mary Had a Little Lamb real loud or something. We later learn the officers on the scene refused Tamir Rice any type of first aid for four crucial minutes. It was only when an FBI agent who happened to be near the scene arrived that he began giving Tamir the life support he needed, making it appear as if the officers may have actually wanted Tamir Rice to die. Of course they did. And of course, the moment he finally did die in the hospital, they said this to each other. Phew, all right. Great. Because dead 12-year-old children tell no tales. Oh, crap. There's video? Oops. Oh, well. And all cops know this. They get taught this their first day training. If you shoot somebody, you better shoot them in the kill zone. You get them in the heart, or you get them in the head, you know, between the eyes and the mouth there. You kill them. Because if they live, you could get in trouble. But if they die, you'll never get in trouble. Never. You have sovereign immunity. You can kill anyone, including a 12-year-old boy with a toy gun, if you feel like it. As long as he dies and can't ever take the witness stand against your ass. That's the law. When you join up the police force, rule number one, if you shoot anyone, you better kill them. What, you think I made that up? I mean, come on. That's the cops that say that themselves. That's not just an accusation, that's an admission by them. I mean, I recall it off the top of my head without a good footnote, but you could find it, hell. You won't have any problem at all finding cops saying that, yeah, that is kind of the thing. Mm-hmm. Why do you think they let him lie there and didn't even try to give him any first aid whatsoever? I mean, the moment they looked at his face, they had to have realized their mistake. Oh, crap, it's a 12-year-old boy. Ipso facto, automatically, a 100% innocent person. 100% their mess up, to say it as politely as possible. And what do? They sit there and pray to baby Jesus that the boy dies so that they'll be at less risk of getting in trouble. Please, Jesus, let this boy die now, the cops prayed. And he did die. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. Hey, all, Scott here for Liberty.me, the brand new social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features nightly classes, guides, events, publishing, and so much more. Sign up now and you get the first 30 days free. And if you click through the link in the right margin at scotthorton.org or use the promo code Scott when you sign up, you'll save $5 per month for life. That's more than a third off the regular price. And hey, once you sign up, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. So, you know, I think a big part of what's left out of the whole conversation about the police brutality lately is the George W. Bush revolution after September 11th. And what they really did was they just declared once and for all that the chief executive is the executive, and that's pretty much all you need to know. And, you know, Glenn Greenwald wrote a book about this where he says it all goes back to Ford pardoning Nixon. That, you know, when these guys commit crimes, it's all right. The law doesn't really apply to them. It only, you know, is made to sort of look like it sometimes. But what David Addington and them accomplished, and, you know, the Supreme Court, in theory, rolled back a little bit of this. But, you know, really, the whole war on terror from the president on down to the governors on down to all the prosecutors and cops in America, they all basically just unleashed. I mean, hell, after Waco, they were all trained up to be warrior killers anyway. After September 11th, their leashes came off. And, I mean, just look at the dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens, scores of completely made-up fake entrapment terrorist cases. I mean, never mind all the people who all they did was donate to charity or something that has nothing to do with any terrorist anything, and they got prosecuted on bogus terrorism charges. But just look how many idiots were entrapped by undercover agents and informants and flipped witnesses and so forth into setting somebody up into some fake and got set up in some fake plot and been prosecuted with that. And then, of course, with all the militarization comes all the military training. And now some of these cops are smart enough that somewhere in their brain they got a little cognitive dissonance that, geez, this is all a lot of overkill. Training for war, really, when I know that my job is going to be, I'll be a traffic cop out there, you know, pulling over my next door neighbor's mom for not using her turn signal and stuff. So I don't really need an MP5 machine gun. I don't really need to be trained like a Delta Force operative doing night raids in Afghanistan. But I guess it's fun and all the equipment and trucks and whatever. So they kind of know that, well, geez, what are we supposed to go to war against the American people? On an individual level. But then the answer is yes. That's what it's all designed to do. To unleash them. And of course, the state in itself is a conspiracy. The state, you know, even according to the dictionary definition, they claim the authority to commit the kind of sins that the rest of us cannot. They may use aggressive force. They claim the monopoly on the right to, in order to prevent anyone else from claiming the right to in the first place. But not only that, all the members of the state, they are all in the conspiracy together to protect each other, right down to the lowest meter maid. They pass that sovereign immunity around as best as they possibly can. You know, when Ken Anderson, the prosecutor from one of the most corrupt counties in Texas, Williamson County, Texas, just north of where I am now, he was prosecuted for knowingly prosecuting an innocent man for the death of his wife. And when he was prosecuted for that and was given one day in jail as his sentence, that was the first time a prosecutor had ever been prosecuted in hundreds of years or something. Anyway, no one had ever heard of such a thing. You'd have had to go back to some unknown era to find a prosecutor who was ever prosecuted for knowingly convicting the wrong person, suborning perjury, etc. They just don't get in trouble for it. They have total immunity for it. Same thing with the judges. Same thing with every last law enforcement officer. As I so often put it on the show, and you can see it in the headlines. The only exceptions are if a cop beats his child to death on the weekend, beats his wife to death on a Saturday night drinking, and he's just completely off the clock, and there's no way to spin it as any sort of law enforcement activity at all, maybe he'll get in trouble. And in the case that was recently in the news, the entire police department came together to frame the lady for killing herself when her husband, the cop, murdered her last New Year's. And they tried to get away with it. Somehow it fell apart and he ended up getting in trouble anyway. But they're not in trouble for all going along and pretending that she killed herself on a Saturday night. You know, whatever night it was. Holiday night, drinking. They're all in it to protect each other. It's basically as simple as that. And then with the advent of the Addington era, they're under the impression that they're trained to treat everyone as the enemy. They're trained to know that they have total immunity, impunity, that they cannot get in trouble, that every other cop will conspire with them, will be an accessory after the fact in any crime that they commit, that the entire government will close ranks to protect them from the law, from the people seeing justice for the laws that they break. And that's why, you know, Michael Hirsch, formerly a Newsweek, he's now the lead writer at something. Anyway, he's a very mainstream journalist. I've interviewed him before, but he's a very mainstream type journalist. He has a giant thing now about the giant cover-up. Sorry for saying giant twice in a row like that. The massive cover-up in the numbers of police killings across the country. Hundreds of people killed. And this is breaking into mainstream news now because the difference between the reality and the coverage so far has now been laid stark in the era, not just of the murder of Mike Brown, but of the massive overreaction of the cops that afternoon to the people who came outside to mull around and curse them under their breath. They called out the 3rd Infantry Division. And the whole world was shocked. Whoa, in America, the democracy, the land of free speech and this and that. They kill a guy. People start mulling around angry, peacefully protesting a little bit. And they completely freak and bring out MRAPs and bring out machine guns and bring out their full military gear as though they're prepared to go to war and kill every last black man in the ghetto. Holy crap. And that's because they are ready. That's how they've been trained up all this time. That's the equipment they've got. You know what? It's no different than, I don't know if you grew up like I did, but when I was in 3rd and 4th grade and we would go around playing guns, you could get in character, right? As a child playing guns, playing soldier or playing Red Dawn Resistance Guerrilla against the soldiers or whichever, you know, cowboy or Indian, whatever you play. You get all dressed up like a cowboy, you feel like one for a minute. You get all dressed up like a Navy SEAL or a Delta Force operator on a Special Forces Kill Taliban mission when all you're doing is searching for, you know, a little bit of pot in the neighborhood. Guess what happens? The people in the neighborhood get treated like the Taliban. Not that that's okay, but I'm just saying. And for all you conservatives especially, but liberals too, who support America's foreign policy regime change in the name of humanitarian war or, you know, benevolent global hegemony or whatever you like to call it, this is the result, okay? This is when you spend time cheerleading for George Bush, shouting down your neighbors who knew better than you. Shut up, George Bush knows what to do because Jesus said so, because the biggest failure of any president ever was his. And so now I trust his judgment more than anyone ever somehow. And shut up. Well, this is the price you pay. Now your local sheriff's officer is a wannabe special forces paramilitary killer. And you have to deal with him. You give up your empire or you live under it. War is the health of the state and cliche and slogan like that. The government, your enemy, they benefit most from exercising the war power. And then that war power comes home. You'll have a Reaper drone flying over your neighborhood by this time, you know, a year from now. And you'll wonder whether there's any connection. Maybe you won't even wonder whether there's any connection between this and the constant state of war overseas. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. Hey y'all, Scott here. So you made a little bit of money in this horrid economy only to find that the Fed has more or less outlawed saving. So into the treacherous waters of the stock market bubble you go. But how to make a little money without too much risk of losing it all? Check out WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager who opens a very real window into his main account, updating his subscribers on the facts of and the reasoning behind all his market moves. Follow along on paper or with real money and see what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. All right, y'all, me again. Scott Horton here on the Scott Horton Show. Whoa, I got a cough. Hang on. God dang. All right. Oh, so one thing I want to say, which I don't know how to say it really, but I guess just I think it's a shame that all the rioting has gone so crazy, and I haven't been keeping up with it that much. I know there's been some arson. And some rioting, and I know that, you know, rioters, now what are you going to say about an angry mob? They're not really thinking straight, really, or they wouldn't be an angry mob. And so instead of targeting even government institutions, obviously they can't assault the police station without getting machine gunned all to death. But, you know, they want to throw some rocks through some windows or something. Go over to the department of whatever the hell. I mean, we're talking in the middle of the night. That would at least make sense. I'm not commanding people. That wasn't a declarative kind of instruction to anyone. I'm just saying that would at least make sense. And instead, it's just kind of targeting any business in town or something. I don't know. And on the other hand, I can see from the point of view of the rioter that they know. The rioters, each and every rioter involved in this thing, I mean, other than some commie from out of town who came to, you know, pretend it's Seattle 99 or whatever, but I just mean the actual people of that town, they know, they have no power. They have no power. But it makes sense that they would imagine that the white business owners in town have power, that they're the ones who made it this way, that they're the ones who run the Democratic and Republican parties, that they're the ones who could use their influence to say, hey, man, lay off the poor black people a little bit, would you? But they never do. So I don't buy that, really. I think the lady that owns the cake shop is absolutely as powerless as the poorest black person. What makes them imagine she has any influence? Other than they don't really know. It's a failure of imagination. It's a goddamn riot, for crying out loud. But the real problem with it is it confuses the issue. It makes it seem like the problem is the people in the streets. The kid with the hole in his head and then all of the people who, you know, feel bad for him. And I saw a poll that said, and I don't know if this is right, you know, it was just a poll. But I saw a poll, it was a Washington Post, whatever the hell poll. And it said that 58% of people thought that the grand jury did the right thing in the case of Michael Brown. Oh, come on. Come on, really? I mean, do they even know what a grand jury is or any of this crap? No. So who knows what that even really means, if it's even an accurate number, necessarily. But yeah, they agree that the cops should have gotten away with it. That's what they're saying, yeah. They're glad that the grand jury let this cop get away with killing this guy. And I think that that number is, I don't know, how many percentage points higher because there's a riot going on Fox News. So they look at some rioters and then, you know, hey, these guys are attacking innocent people, destroying their businesses, destroying their livelihoods, their families, their lives. I mean, they're not murdering people, but you destroy somebody's business. That's severe and that's scary to regular people, mobs of crazy arsonists. What the hell is that? And then, of course, the cops won't do anything to protect the businesses. The cops will only protect government buildings and will not protect. Even the National Guard got called out, but they were not deployed to line the sidewalk and protect the local businesses. So then it's left to local vigilantes to go out with their guns. And, well, I don't mean vigilantes in a bad way. I mean, it's left up to local community people and their invited guests to protect their own property. And it's not strictly a racial thing. You may have seen the story about black employees of a white-owned auto garage said, hey, man, we've worked for this guy for years. He's a good man, and we're going to stand here with our rifles, and we're going to make sure that his business survives this chaos. Simple as that. Again, crazy to think that the guy that owns the local garage could somehow force the local cops to stop being a military police state, that he's somehow responsible for what happened to Mike Brown or for any of the backlash against the protesters or any of the police backlash against the protesters or any of that. But anyway, but then also, you know, I'm a little concerned when I read this thing all about the Oath Keepers showing up. And I don't recall, and I could be wrong, because you know what? I can't follow every damn news story in the world to the closest detail. But I don't recall them showing up to protect the poor black people of Ferguson when they were protesting and the cops were aiming sniper rifles at their heads. I don't remember the Oath Keepers saying, whoa, now wait a minute. We're sworn to protect these civilians' rights even from you. I don't remember that. But all of a sudden, they're available to be an auxiliary to the police, to report people who they say they suspect of violating the law and all this kind of thing. I respect them, you know, asking and getting themselves invited to be volunteer security. If that's what the local property owners want, that's absolutely within their right to invite volunteer security to come and protect their property in a crisis or not in a crisis. No problem there. But I just, you know, and I don't want to see I'm not saying I want to see a shootout between the Oath Keepers and the cops, but I'm just saying, you know, I don't know. What's the difference between the blacks of Ferguson and the rancher out there in Utah? What the hell's his name all of a sudden? They've got right on their side a hell of a lot more than him. And yet somehow that was a cut and dry case of he was in the right. Why? Because he's an old white guy? They're there to defend his rights against the cops at all costs. And those guys were prepared for a real ass shootout out there, man. There's footage of those cops wisely being ordered by somebody above and away on the radio to back down and get the hell out of there before this thing turns into a massacre. And that thing, man. But then in Ferguson, oh, you know who the enemy is? The rioters. And they are the enemy of private property rights, and they're a threat to life. I ain't saying that, but, well, I don't mean to use the term enemy, but you understand what I'm saying. Anyway, so I'm a bit concerned about that. And then the other thing that I want to say, which, you know, I know none of this is very, like, smart or not even really a point. It's just kind of me babbling, but whatever. I also want to say that I think, well, I'm not sure what to say. I guess that's my point. I don't know exactly what to say about race in all of this. Because, of course, if you're black, then this sure looks like a racial issue to you, no doubt about it. But the truth is, like I was saying before about the David Addington 21st century that we live in here, that the government is completely lawless. They're completely unleashed. And they kill and they brutalize and they falsely persecute and prosecute white people all damn day, too. Mexicans all damn day, too. Of course, blacks get it the worst. And probably from the point of view of, well, you know, I don't know. Guess I should ask. It seems from here like it's getting worse. Like it's, you know, getting toward feeling like the bad old days of Jim Crow again here when there had been some progress. Not like it was ever safe to be a black man walking the street. When the cops could murder you at any moment because they feel like it or anything. But it seems like it seems like it's getting worse now, that's all. And I can certainly see why to blacks involved in this. This is entirely a racial issue. They don't run the state. White people run the state, and white people use it against them ruthlessly all day. But I just, you know, and people should take note of that. And if political correctness actually helps to reverse this crisis in any way, then that would be great. But it seems like somewhere, I just want to make sure it doesn't get lost, that the real problem here is that government employees have complete immunity and impunity to do anything to anyone. There is no accountability for agents of the state. No accountability. And what that means is they can kill whoever they want. They can kill a 12-year-old boy. They can kill a 12-year-old girl. They can kill anyone. And they'll never get in trouble. And until that changes, black, white, Mexican, any kind of Asian or anything else, Episcopalian or atheist or anything else, none of us will be free. None of us will be safe from these people until they do not feel safe from the law getting their ass too if they break it. And by the way, that's kind of the myth of America in general, is that it was created by free human beings who allowed the government to exist by law in the first place, and that it must obey it. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Hey, I'm Scott. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. Today is a crappy day for getting guests to say, yes, I'll do your radio show. Well, I don't care. Listen, I know I gotta get to the wars here, man. Let me just say a couple more things about the cops here real quick. The first one is, I keep forgetting to point this out, man. I think this is a real important thing. In fact, I have a reasonable suspicion that what made the case for the, de facto acquittal of Darren Wilson by the grand jury there was his language, which went unchallenged and surely manipulated the mindless idiots of the jury there when he called Michael Brown it and said it turned into a demon, or he said, oh, it was like it turned into a demon, along those lines. Now, in any open trial, a defense attorney would jump up and shout, Your Honor, are you freaking kidding me? What in the world? In fact, the prosecutor probably would be like, whoa, let's get away from the demon line of questioning here for a second. That doesn't look good. All right? In an open case. But here, in the case of this grand jury, the prosecutor's on the side of the cop the whole time. The prosecutor is the cop's defense attorney. And he's basically making the case that, and then you had no choice, right? Right. Yeah. And leading him all along. There's nothing like an objection. In fact, it's a reasonable suspicion that the DA was nodding along and encouraging him. Yes, yes. Mike Brown was not an 18-year-old boy, man. Mike Brown wasn't even a male human. Mike Brown was an it. A thing. A demonic thing. Now, what would you do if this massive demonic thing was after you? Darren Wilson asks the grand jury put yourselves in his position. He says he was like a 5-year-old fighting Hulk Hogan. Well, Hulk Hogan is a big dude. I mean, Andre the Giant helped him a little bit, but he body slammed Andre the Giant, dude. That's a big guy. Mike Brown's nowhere near the size of Hulk Hogan. And he wasn't a real, you know, obviously he's, you know, had a big build, but was not like a cut weightlifter type. He was a big, soft, doughy type. The cop, Darren Wilson, was probably in better shape, physically speaking. And he also was over 6 feet and over 200 pounds. Only in his case, again, a much more athletic physique. So the cop, Darren Wilson, he's no twerp. And Mike Brown was not much bigger than him at all. You know, if you eyeballed the two of them together, you wouldn't see too much difference in their sizes. But no, it used its demonic power to become so strong that the only comparison is like a 5-year-old child versus Hulk Hogan, the strongest man you can think of. Don't say Lou Ferrigno, because people might go, wait, which guy is that again? Make sure Hulk Hogan, they can immediately, you know, picture that bicep. Oh, yeah, that guy. That's a strong guy. Boy, did this demon have a lot of magical power. Its next maneuver was to bulk up, to run through the shots. God, how frightened this cop must have been when this magical, superhuman, inhuman demon turned to his bulletproof form. Poor Darren Wilson. If it hadn't have been for the headshot, I guess he could have unloaded that whole clip into this monster's chest. And then the monster would have punched him one more time, and it would have been fatal, even though apparently the one or two hits that Mike Brown landed on Darren Wilson, 99% chance in self-defense after the cop assaulted him through the window of his truck, which is a pretty clumsy way to assault somebody and grab them around the throat, but anyway, left hardly a mark at all. This is the testimony that the prosecutor said, yeah, wow, Did you hear that, grand jury? About the giant, magical, demonic Negro. Who was so demonic, he lost his humanity entirely. This 18-year-old son of some mother. He became an it. A magical creature from hell. So, you know, what would you do? And the fact that everyone agrees he turned around. Everyone agrees he turned around. Yeah, that was when Big Mike turned around and put his hands up and said, okay, I don't have a gun. That was what other witnesses testified to. He turned around like, hey, okay, stop. He quit running because the cop was still shooting at him. Oh, I heard 10 different right-wingers saying, oh, everyone who said he was shot in the back perjured themselves. No. They just thought he shot him in the back because he was shooting at him while he was running away. He just missed. 12 shots fired total. That was why he turned. That was why he stopped and turned around. Because the cop was shooting at him as he was running away. So he said, okay, I don't have a gun. And the cop kept shooting him anyway. At 135 or 150 or whatever feet away. Never mind that they lied to you and said 35 for months, 35 feet away. Never mind that they just imply, somehow you're just supposed to believe that to turn around means that he was bulking up with, I mean, it was bulking up with its demonic powers to run through bullets, to charge the poor, innocent, ambushed ATF agent. I mean, cop who started this fight and escalated it and escalated it and escalated it. They never prove that. They never give the slightest reason for you to believe that for him to turn around, that the concession that he turned around is somehow a concession to the case of any witness who said, and then, yeah, it looked like he was charging at the cop, which I think there is, you know, a witness or two who corroborate that story of the cops. But there are just as many who say, yeah, nobody argues that he didn't turn around. Everybody says he turned around. But what's more likely to you? That he turned around? That it turned around with magical Negro demonic powers to bulk up and run through bullets and murder this innocent cop? Or that the cop was still shooting at him and he wanted to live? And so he was trying to surrender. Give me a break, man. I'm sorry. I don't know, dude. People just believe what they want. This is the unfortunate thing. Everybody's a truther in the way the critics use that phrase to mean someone who's uninterested in actual facts and starts with their conclusion first and then believes whatever they want to believe to make it fit. You know, I mean, I took psychology 101 at junior college, and that was the first lesson. Everybody believes whatever the hell they want. And so, if you're a conservative, well, then you're on the side of the cop. If you're anything to the left of the center, then you're on the side of the black guy. With, you know, very few exceptions. It's just another, you know, simple kind of left-right, black-white, country and rock and roll sort of split. Whose side are you on? Whose facts do you like? I'm probably just as guilty as the rest of you, too. Hell.
Hey, y'all, Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all. QR Silver Commodity Discs, the first ever QR code 1 ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks.
Yeah, and here's the truth about America, too. On the one in a million shot where a cop actually is charged for killing somebody, yeah, he still gets away with it, though. Charges dropped for cop who fatally shot sleeping 7-year-old girl. This is at Mint Press News. And Ayanna Stanley Jones, you might remember, they were shooting an episode of The First 48. And, boy, if only she hadn't stolen some Swisher Sweets that day. Oh, I mean, if only she hadn't been sleeping on a couch in her house that was a duplex. And the cops went in the wrong door. And the SWAT cop used his MP5 to put a bullet straight through her forehead and then blamed it. Oh, first he threw a flashbang grenade at her face. Then he blew it off and then blamed it on her grandmother for being in the way. And of course, the guy that they were looking for wasn't even there. And of course, the cop should not have even had his finger on the trigger. But anyway, killed the 7-year-old girl. Of course, the best coverage of this of all is William Norman Grigg, that famous communist who has written so much about local police abuse. And but it was funny. They let him off on a technicality. His lawyer petitioned for some kind of summary judgment that went in his favor. And the appeal said that was the wrong kind of thing. The judge should not have allowed it. And the law says that that's correct. However, the appeals judge ruled that they didn't have the authority to make them do it over. To make them go back. So, anyway, there you go. They found a way somehow. The prosecutors, the defense attorneys, the judges found a way for this cop to get away with murdering a 7-year-old girl, Iyanna Stanley Jones, in Detroit. And, you know, as I was saying earlier about Michael Hirsch writing in, well, this one is in the Daily Beast. Oh, this is a Wall Street Journal one. No, there's one by Michael Hirsch, I think, in Newsweek, where he says that there's at least one strong estimate that more than 100 people. It was more than 1,000 people a year. That was what it was. So I was thinking the average was, because there was that one report that said the cops kill somebody, an unarmed person, on average once every 28 hours, something like that. Well, apparently there's as many as 1,000 police killings a year. Perhaps the records are so sloppy, nobody really knows, but there are many people trying now to compile it all. So that's more than 2 or 3 a day, right? 365. I'm not that good at math, but I think you get my point. Killer cops completely unleashed. Eric Garner, you know, the grand jury is supposed to announce what they're going to do in the case of Eric Garner. The guy who was not selling black market cigarettes. The guy who was just standing on the corner, had just broken up a fight. And then the cops just attacked him, and one of them strangled him to death. Right there on video, right there on the street. Oh, and then when the EMS got there, they all just stood around BSing and doing nothing as the guy took his last gasps. Because the EMS, they're in it with the cops against you. So I guess we'll find out what happens. Supposedly that's going to be today that we find out about the grand jury in the case of Eric Garner in New York there. And, yeah. Oh, and then I guess the one more thing is, and I haven't had a chance to read this yet, but I'll tell you about it. It's, Obama names truly bad cop to co-chair task force on 21st century policing. This is at Under News, and I've only had a chance to scan it, but this is about, Philadelphia Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey is going to be the co-chair of the task force on 21st century policing. Of course, the answer will be, we need to nationalize it all more. Of course. But anyway, they go through here and have quite a list of the skeletons in this police chief's closet here and all the abuses he's gotten away with. God dang, this thing is about 4,000 words of the corruption of this guy who's going to be the co-chair of the commission to make matters worse. Big surprise. All right. Enough on the cops for today. Let's talk about Iran. Let's see here. The Parchin puzzle at Jim Loeb's blog. Loeblog.com. Jim Loeb is featuring this article by Robert Kelly, who is formerly of the International Atomic Energy Agency, and does a thorough debunking of David Albright and related liars' accusations about Iran testing a nuclear implosion device on depleted uranium metal in an explosion containing chamber at their Parchin military facility. And Robert Kelly, formerly of the IAEA, throws cold water all over this ridiculous report in 4 or 5 ways. You can find the article today on antiwar.com. He starts with the fact that the timeline doesn't even fit at all. They try to say that this Ukrainian scientist, Dan Alenko, designed the chamber in the year 2000. And that it was in there and up and running later that same year. That it was installed in the year 2000. And he's saying, are you kidding me? There are no pictures of this chamber, but there's a cartoon of it. And a former IAEA official claims he's seen pictures of it. That pictures of it do exist. And yet somehow we've still never seen these pictures. We've seen a cartoon drawing, like Saddam's mobile biological weapons labs. We've seen a cartoon drawing of this chamber. But if you take it at face value, why, it would take a hell of a long time to engineer all that, to mold the steel, to put the thing together, and then when did they transport it there? And they transported it in how many pieces? And then he goes into why it would make no sense, as I've told you for years on this show, citing nuclear bomb expert Gordon Prather, it would make no sense for them to test an implosion bomb like this in a chamber anyway. That's not how it's done. It's done outside, always has been, at Lawrence Livermore and, you know, by the Lawrence Livermore guys when they're testing implosion devices. And anyway, he just goes through, music's playing there, I gotta go. But check it out, it's the Spotlight article today on antiwar.com, the Parchin puzzle solved by Robert Kelly. It's a bunch of fake hype and David Albright is a liar.
Why does the U.S. support the tortured dictatorship in Egypt? Because that's what Israel wants. Why can't America make peace with Iran? Because that's not what Israel wants. And why do we veto every attempt to shut down illegal settlements on the West Bank? Because it's what Israel wants. Seeing a pattern here? Sick of it yet? It's time to put America first. Support the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org and push back against the Israel lobby and their sock puppets in Washington, D.C. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Man, you need some new stickers for the back of your truck. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. Aren't you sick and tired of everyone else being wrong about everything all the time? Well, now you can tell them all what's right with some stickers from LibertyStickers.com. At LibertyStickers.com, they're against everything, so you know they're good on your issue, too. Whether it's the wars, police state, gun laws, the left and right of the president, LibertyStickers.com has hundreds of choices so you can find just the right words to express your opposition and contempt for those who would violate your rights. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
Oh, yeah, so I meant to mention earlier, I saw this morning The Internet's Own Boy, the documentary about Aaron Swartz, who killed himself as he was facing years in prison for downloading some academic journals. And anyway, it's a great story because, I mean, it's a horrible story and all that, but it's instructive is what I mean. Because here was a guy who actually wasn't a criminal, and here was a guy who the people whose documents he downloaded weren't pressing charges. And here's a guy who, it might not have even been a civil matter. It might have been the kind of thing where people needed to sit down and drink a beer and talk about things and come to an understanding, maybe. Possibly a civil action somehow could have fit in there, I don't know. But here's what happened. According to all the people who made this, and there ain't a libertarian among them, this is just, you know, center-left, run-of-the-mill American Democratic types mostly, I think, right? They're not radical leftists. They might have, you know, strong political opinions about one or the other thing, but they're just run-of-the-mill regular people. They don't have an ideological axe to grind as far as what I'm going to say. And that is, but they describe perfectly, just as a libertarian would, the public choice theory, which says that even if you give them as much credit as you can, basically, and I don't know who the hell I'm paraphrasing here, but this is the way I put it, that the people who run government are people. They're not the government. They're just people. And what they have in mind is their own best interests, just like everybody else. And that ultimately there is no national interest. And ultimately, there is no seek justice under law or any of that kind of crap. That's all just marble monuments and whatever to deceive you. What things really come down to, the way the government operates, is they do, the individuals in the government departments, they do what's best for them. And in this case, he had some pigs at the FBI and at the Department of Justice, the U.S. Attorney's Office, and they had decided individually and together that this would be good for them if they would crucify this young man. And so they did. That's what happened, and that's why it happened. And it's as plain as day, and his lawyers tell the story, and the experts tell the story, and the other lawyer, and his father, and his friends, and everyone tells the story of what happened here. And what happened here was Not that he had broken a law and the law says, hey, sorry, the law says mandatory minimum if you do this thing. The law didn't even really say that. They were using the law as an excuse to nail this kid. And he ended up in such despair, he killed himself. I believe he hanged himself from the ceiling fan or something. From the banister. And the thing of it was, the reason why it's such a special case is because this was a real special person. You know, people hang themselves because of how terrified they are of what the government is doing to them pretty often. Like that Goody Mob song, right, about the little kid hanging himself from his bunk bed because he had to go to court in the morning and he was just so terrified he couldn't even face the damn rising sun. That happens a lot. But in this case, this was a special genius. This was the guy who could write the script, who could change the world. And that's why they targeted him, and that's why they destroyed him. And as they explain in there, it was just a symbolic thing. You know, they could sort of lump him together with all of Anonymous and all of Lulzsec and all of the Arab Spring and all of everything that was making the national security state afraid in 2011. And he kind of looked the part. And so even though he was just himself and he had just done this thing where he had downloaded some documents, they decided that they would make an example out of him for their own good. For the good of the career of the U.S. attorney and the good of the career of the FBI agents in the Boston FBI computer crime office. Well, geez, they had their own computer crime office. What are they supposed to do? Not use it? Ooh, look, guys. An easy one. And they even said, according to, I believe it's the father being interviewed, says that, yes, they told us we are going to make an example out of you. And then they show the lawyer saying, you know, that was what the prosecutor said. But the lawyer said an example for who? Who the hell else is using Harvard's network to break into JSTOR to liberate academic documents? And then we don't even have any reason to believe necessarily that he was going to post them online. It was a little bit of a protest, but maybe not that big of one. And they even had a previous example of where he had hacked a whole ton of documents and had even shown it was working with these grad students and had even shown how these corporations were bankrolling law professors who were writing journal articles that were being used to help these corporations in their court cases and how he had done like what do you call it? Able danger, you know, pattern analysis, basically, to figure out what was going on here. But he didn't publish it. He didn't put it all online. He didn't give it all to the New York Times. And so there was, you know, even reason to believe that he would not have done so with the JSTOR articles either. And then, of course, the saddest part is this poor, stupid girl that was his friend, her lawyers made a deal with the government to bring her in and they would give her a letter of immunity if she would tell them some stuff about Schwartz. And she was just so stupid and narrow-minded. And in fact, she claims in the documentary, so sick at the time. She didn't really understand. She could only look out of her own eyes. She could not stop for a minute and hover in the air and look third person. What is going on here? They're trying to get you to say something that they can use against Aaron. So don't. Right? She couldn't. As she explains it, you can tell it's honest. She was just too damn dumb to understand that you are state's witness now. You're serving the government. They're not out to get you. She keeps saying, I didn't understand. I didn't even do anything. They're trying to get him. They're trying to use you against him. She couldn't understand. It's as simple as any episode of Law and Order. But she couldn't see her place in the plot, in the script, as it was playing out. She didn't understand. And so what she said was, well, he wrote this manifesto. And they went and read this manifesto, and it said all this brave stuff about hacking and liberating truth and stuff. And it completely freaked them out, like he was Osama bin Laden and whatever. Or at least they could make the case that here was some terrible cyber threat. The kid that invented Reddit. The kid that invented Reddit. And as his friend said, they said, you know, he looks enough like a hacker in the midst of Lulzsec this and Anonymous that and the Arab Spring uprising and Guy Fawkes masks everywhere. We'll cut his head off and put it on a pike. and try to scare everybody else into backing down. But him? Aaron Swartz, see, it didn't matter that he was not just a good kid, he was a great kid. Right? It didn't matter at all. He was the meat of a dead dog to them. He was just something that they could use for their own public choice theory, individual selfish interests. Oh no, only private property owners are greedy and selfish. Not public-spirited government employees. Why, they lose all sense of themselves and care only, with a tear in their eye all day, care only for the greater good of justice and truth in the nation, like in the pledge they force you to repeat. Don't you believe it? And you watch this movie about what they did to Aaron Swartz, and you know what? Like, why isn't that the Boston-level massacre level wrongdoing that turns the entire American people against this government? You know, the girl that they manipulated into turning against her friend, it's really sad. She, like, on the verge of tears, says, it's not right what we have let them become, that we say that this is okay, that this is what our government does to people. This isn't the deal that we made, that they protect our liberty and property and prosperity. This is something else. How did we let it get like this? She asks.
Hey y'all, Scott here. Like I told you before, the Future Freedom Foundation at FFF.org represents the best of the libertarian movement. Led by the fearless Jacob Hornberger, FFF writers James Bovard, Sheldon Richmond, Wendy McElroy, Anthony Gregory, and many more write the op-eds and the books, host the events, and give the speeches that are changing our world for the better. Help support the Future Freedom Foundation. Subscribe to their magazine, The Future of Freedom. Or to contribute, just look for the big red donate button at the top of FFF.org. Peace and freedom. Thank you.
I spent the whole show talking about how much I hate cops, and you should. And that's all right. You should. Hey, what if a cop killed your kid and then called your kid it? And didn't just demonize your dead, murdered kid, but literally used the word demon. Well, it was a demon. I'd be upset. That's all I'm saying. Idiots. All right. Talk about the worst. I didn't mention the thing yesterday about Baghdadi's wife being arrested because I didn't believe it. Well, it's not true, so. There you go. How about this? Republican senator, 10-hour operation was ready to go last year in Syria. Senator Bob Corker says the operations would have been very targeted, very brief. And here's one more example before I get to the point. In new interview, Bashar al-Assad demands America bomb his country harder. Zach Beauchamp. Oh, and this article is just so full of irony. Yes, Assad is insisting that he and America have a common enemy in ISIS and that America should bomb them better. He falsely interprets what he says as saying America should send in ground troops into Syria. He's talking about his own forces ought to be the ground troops and that's what it'll take, but he's saying that America needs to cooperate with him or at least stop targeting him for regime change when the enemy is the Islamic State, right? But then the whole article is so full of nonsense. And it's funny because, you know, I talk about how ironic the Syria policy is here and how maddening it all is, right? But so for Vox.com, they find all the irony in the places where they believe the nonsense. He says, oh yeah, here's Assad taunting Obama and saying you won't send in ground troops. But he was not saying sending ground troops to Syria. He was saying it'll take ground troops, as Beauchamp then says two paragraphs later. He's talking about his own ground troops. Yeah. And then he says, oh, Assad turns his blind eye to ISIS's growth. And I even followed the link there to their little card. And it's just that same old ridiculous, completely debunked and never was credible in the first place conspiracy theory that somehow Assad doesn't mind the Islamic State. He only targets the FSA and he just likes the Islamic State just fine. Yeah, except all the times that his troop his troops got in full-scale battles with the Islamic State and killed them, and except all those times where the Islamic State sacked their military bases and cut all their soldiers, and sometimes including even their officers' heads off, and put them on pikes. Oh, yeah, no, they get along great. Yeah, Assad is behind Al-Qaeda in Syria, huh? Yeah, right. That is such a stupid lie. And then they, oh yeah, so here's Assad is saying that we should fight the Islamic State more, but we all know he really likes them. No, he is their greatest enemy. He's calling for the Americans to stop being hypocrites. He's not the hypocrite. And I'm not saying he's a good guy. He's a fascist, evil, butcher dictator who doesn't mind bombing neighborhoods to get his point across. He's a politician, in other words, but that doesn't mean that lies are true. This goes to show, along with this BuzzFeed piece by Rosie Gray here, Eli Lake's girlfriend, that still the policy is that Assad is the bad guy in Syria. That somehow America must complete a regime change against ISIS's greatest opponent before fighting ISIS. It's crazy. Look at a map. You know, Syria has a coast there on the eastern Mediterranean. You really want Damascus to fall? You really want to de-bothify the government and abolish the Syrian army? And set up for a whole new stage of civil war between, you know, what's left of warring militia groups among the Christians and the Shiites and the Kurds, without even a state army anymore. That makes no sense. It is madness that this is the policy. But they just can't admit. They just can't admit that, okay, it's America's anti-Assad policy that has helped accomplish the rise of the Islamic State. It ain't Assad. It's America and Saudi. And yes, it's true. Since 2011, on this show, we have documented with all different reports, including by our friend Eric Margolies, who was talking to his French intelligence officer sources over there on the continent. And they were telling him, yeah, French special forces and spies are over there helping with this thing. We're working with the Saudis, the Qataris, the Turks. Hell, Brown Moses and them were tracing, guns from America and the Allies to the rebels. And there's been reporting all along, even in the New York Times and the Washington Post, but not solely, but all along, that all the weapons that America was trying to give to so-called moderate FSA factions, who aren't really moderate at all, were still ending up in the hands of Jabhat al-Nusra, all the way up through the point where ISIS split off from Nusra back in the spring of 2013. But before that, it was always Nusra from 2011 through 2013 that was at the head of the entire insurgency there. And the American and their allied policy was to marginalize the Baathists and support the insurgency. And they just can't turn it around. They want to just keep going then. And then I guess once the Baathist government falls and the army is abolished and it's just a full-scale war of Alawite and Shiite and Sunni militias killing each other and butchering each other to death, then we'll really have to invade, huh? Oh my God, who could have anticipated that abolishing the army and de-Baathifying the government could be a problem, huh? Gee, we hoped that a new leader would come to the fore and forge a compromise, but I guess it'll have to be America. I don't know. We're going to be a war over there for decades and decades. It's incredible. I still can't get over the fact that they just can't admit the reality of who's who on the ground in Syria. And how, you know, when Hegel says, yes, you know, it's true. When we bomb ISIS, we help Assad. But he didn't follow that up with, so what? Who cares, man? You know, maybe you don't like Assad, but how about end the war there first? Marginalize Nusra, sworn loyal to Al-Qaeda, and the Islamic State, probably the greater threat as far as that goes. and then work on a political transition, maybe. But, of course, you know, I'm for non-intervention. I'm not saying any of that, but I'm just saying, from the point of view of the empire, it's madness that there's even a debate that Assad is any kind of enemy at all of America when he is the greatest asset fighting, the most powerful asset fighting the Islamic State right now. And al-Nusra, for that matter. But anyway, so there it goes. Just like the article by, I'm sorry, it was in the New York Times the other day by that lady. Oh, man, it's on the tip of my tongue. She was the New York Times reporter that got in trouble for saying something true in the Gaza War a few months back. Anne Bernard, okay? Anne Bernard wrote this piece in the New York Times about how, yeah, everybody is just so frustrated that America won't get rid of Assad. Like, this is the only criticism on Syria policy is not how insane it is that America would have an anti-Assad policy at all at this point. How outright treasonous it is to have an anti-Assad policy at this point when that only benefits the Islamic State. The argument only is you got to do more to fight Assad, as these idiots at Vox put it. Yeah, the more Assad fights the Islamic State, the more he's the reason they exist. And of course, George Bush is the reason they exist. And America and Saudi and Turkey and Qatar and I guess the Kuwaitis some too and whoever, they're the reasons that the Islamic State is what it is now. The truth is, if there hadn't been any Western intervention against Assad back in 2011 and 12, he would have won the civil war back then. There would have never been an Islamic State. Or maybe in Western Iraq, but not in Eastern Syria. Assad would have won the war by now. Hell, you could read David Sanger in the New York Times talking about how the jihadists are getting all the weapons in the spring of 2012. You can hear Hillary Clinton saying American support for the rebels at all amounts to support for Al-Qaeda. All right, see y'all tomorrow.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition.